And welcome back here on this Wednesday morning, live from RKGGF Studios in downtown Coffeyville. I'm Sam Speck with the K-State Research and Extension Offices. I'm joined by Kylie Ludwig and Jacob Weber, again with K-State Research and Extension Offices. Welcome back to the two of you again. You can listen to our 7 o'clock segment on the podcast version on the online page at kggfradio.com underneath the Community tab. We talked a little bit about bagworms, when you might see them. It's coming up here very shortly if you haven't seen them already, and prevention. So again, you can listen back to that on the main screen. But we are coming up to summertime here. With that, we kind of shift our focus over to the world of safety and kind of prevention and just more or less education of kind of the upcoming time, because everybody knows that they want the best for their children. They want the best care for them. But sometimes maybe you're at a pool, there's a lot of kids, everybody's running around, kind of a fiasco to follow. So Kylie and I are going to kind of go down some tips throughout the year to keep your kids safe this summer, and I think a good place to start was just at that. A lot of people are going to be visiting the pools. A lot of people are going to be, you know, going to water parks or even at the river, lakes, things like that. What's some good tips that we can give our parents out there for kids around water, or, you know, if they happen, God forbid, have to perform anything if their child was drowning or anything like that. So what are some good tips for us?
Well, hopefully it's going to quit raining.
Yes,
it's eventually
going
to quit raining, and it's going to be warm enough to go to those pools and lakes. According to the Centers for Disease Control, the CDC, drownings are the leading cause of injury death for young children ages 1 to 4. So 3 children die every day as a result of drowning. Mm. And so the more that we can supervise and be aware of what's going on when we're around water, the safer our children are going to be. So the first point is to always supervise your children and making sure that there's at least one responsible adult watching them. Drownings happen quickly and quietly, so adults watching kids near water should avoid distracting activities like playing cards, reading books, talking on your phone.
I was going to say, don't forget that cell phone.
Scrolling on your phone. Time gets away from you whenever you're doing those activities, and it takes seconds for a child to go under. So you also want to make sure you're limiting your drug and alcohol activities as well, because it's just not safe for those kids. Swim lessons. There's lots of swim lessons that are around right now. Our public pools have them. I know in Parsons we have at the core, there's swim lessons that happen there in an indoor pool. Mm-hmm. There's a variety of lessons that can happen, and you can go multiple years. There's lots of levels when it comes to swimming and teaching kids to swim. So those formal swim lessons can protect your children from drowning as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's Red Cross or something down in Caney that has done it for years and years. And you're right, there's different levels. There's the basic, just kind of when they fall in, to learn how to float and at least keep themselves up. And then there's also treading through water and getting to the edge. So yeah, there's different steps, but at least getting, like you mentioned, the formal swimming lessons and at least being able to float. I like the point that you make too, because when you're at, I mean, regardless of how many Bud Lights that you may have had, it might be a beautiful day, anything like that, there's a lot of other kids in the water. So maybe even if they are making a whole lot of noise, kids are yelling anyway. They're screaming. It's distracting. It's not like you're going to shift your focus all of a sudden now that you hear a kid screech. It's almost like you zero those out when you're at a pool. So
right,
you really have to be paying attention.
Well, and your lifeguards at the public pools, they have a lot of kids to watch.
Yeah.
So and it's really easy to lose track of where your kid is, because everyone kind of looks the same. If you have boys, you know, they're all in swim trunks and no shirts on. And then girls have their little swimsuits on. It's hard to keep track of them. So actually, the more eyes that can watch them, the better.
Absolutely. Well, and I think it would be good just really, even when you become a parent, regardless, just going for the pool for the first time, but getting the CPR kind of the basics down as
yes.
well.
Yes, CPR skills could save someone's life, and that's not even around the pool. I mean, that could be just, you know, in the local
as a parent
in
general.
Store. Yes, so I know you can call the hospital, and they have classes scheduled, or you talked about Red Cross. They can let you know where those classes are going to happen and when they're going to happen, and even like our local fire department in Edna, they have to have CPR training as well. So sometimes you can get in with those classes too.
Absolutely. Well, with that, there's also this, we're just talking public pools here, but parents also kind of either put up pools sometimes for the summer. Maybe they already have one in the backyard as well. And if you've got a kid, you know, age 1 to 4, as we had mentioned, that are a large part of that statistic, might be a better idea to lock it up, fence it up, things like that. What would be kind of the best, would that be your best piece of advice there? Or?
Yeah, and even if you don't have a fence, a lot of those ladders can be taken out of your pool.
Yeah, that's true.
I've seen some videos, though, where if you have a climber for a child, you're going to have to still watch and make sure that what you're, how you're trying to keep them out of that water is really safe.
Absolutely.
So gates that lock, that have, you know, locks that sometimes adults have trouble getting open, those are good to put on there as well. So if you can put a fence around your pool and you have the funds to be able to do that, you know, that would be an ideal situation. But,
absolutely.
You know, taking those ladders out of the pool and removing them, that's going to give them hopefully a time, your parent, as a parent, time to be able to find your child real quick before they get into the water.
Yeah, and then this last piece right here just kind of should be common sense. I think even on an open body of water like the lake, I've been in the ocean before, I feel better with a life jacket on. But, you know, just in general, it's you can't go to the lake without one if you've got kiddos, especially if they haven't gone through, you know, extensive swimming lessons.
Right. Locally, we're worried about lakes, you know, but even this earlier this year, we went to the ocean and we made our kids wear life jackets and we looked around and none of the other kids had life jackets on. But we also saw a rescue while we were there.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, you would rather be safe than sorry.
Absolutely. You know? Well, and you get to a big body of water and it's kind of eerie feeling. It is. Like I said, I can swim just fine and I like having a life jacket on when I'm in the ocean or the middle of a lake.
Yes. And for the most part, lakes around here, they're not clear lakes. And so, you know, if someone goes under, you don't know where they're at. And so that life jacket is really going to keep your kid above water and keep them safe.
Absolutely. Well, we're talking about, you know, just general safety around the pool, around bodies of water in general, but that's not the only threat, really, all throughout the summertime to kids and really others as well. A lot of people that work outside don't really put this into thought, but heat exhaustion, heat stroke. I mean, the sun does a lot of damage potentially every day. I mean, obviously you get a sunburn here or there, but that's really the least of your concerns sometimes.
Yes. Heat-related illnesses can happen to anyone. However, infants and children up to 4 are at greater risk. So for heat-related illnesses, the best defense is prevention. Now, there's heat stroke, heat exhaustion, heat cramps, sunburns, heat rashes. There's a lot of things to look for whenever it comes to heat and summertime. So we want to never want to leave children, infants, pets in a parked car, even if the windows are cracked open. You know, I mean, I was at a store the other day, and we went in, and there was dogs in the car, and it was hot, and they had the windows cracked, but you know they were getting hot in there, because they were still in the car when we got done.
Oh, man. Yeah. And, well, and they're wearing, you know, probably the equivalent of a winter jacket, as I would be sitting in the back seat of the car.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. Another tip for infants and children, loose clothing, lightweight, light-colored. If you're going to do activities outdoors, if you could schedule those in the morning or in the later afternoon, or even, and a lot of times that playground equipment's really hot.
Yeah.
So they're going to want to play more if you choose those times of the day. And then, of course, sunscreen is super important. Everyone probably has a different brand. I know my children are allergic to some types of sunscreen. Mm-hmm. And so just finding the one that works for you, and when you're out in the sun, make sure you apply it and reapply it frequently.
Absolutely. Yeah, don't pull what I did last weekend. I got a little lazy by the pool, snoozed for a little bit too long, and man, I was fried on the front side. But I'll tell you what, you live and you learn sometimes. But you're right, you know, in a lot of places they have sand for playgrounds as well. That heats up a lot. Mm-hmm. The sidewalk heats up a lot, the equipment as well. So I mean, really, it's like you said, prevention is the best, or just kind of being aware of it. And it just blows my mind that people leave dogs and humans in the vehicle while they go into the store.
Yeah.
I mean, I can understand maybe you leave the car on and the AC on and threat losing the whole vehicle itself. But, you know, what? It makes me scratch my head. It really does. So with that, you know, say what are some signs, I guess, is a good way to see it, maybe your kid is experiencing heat exhaustion or a heat stroke, something like that, and he maybe can't really, or he or she can't really communicate to that. What are some signs that that it's actually happening, if you know?
Sure. With a heat stroke, you may feel their pulse racing. They may start complaining about a headache, or they might not feel well. When you ask them questions, they might act confused. With a heat exhaustion, they might look cold and clammy, a weak pulse. They may be nauseous or vomiting. They might have muscle cramps. Same again with the headache. They may even pass out with heat exhaustion. Mm. Heat cramps, there's excessive sweating, intense muscle pains or spasms. Sunburn, of course, is kind of obvious. You know, your skin's painfully red. Sometimes if you've really got a bad sunburn, there's blisters. And with heat rash, it looks like red clusters or small blisters that look like pimples on the skin. So things, you know, severe cases like heat stroke, you want to call 911, move the person to a cooler place, help lower their temperature, which you could do that with cool cloths or in a cool bath.
Yep.
Heat exhaustion, again, move them to a cool place, loosen their clothes, the same cool bath, wet cloth if you have access to that. If you can get them to start drinking some fluids, that's always good. If symptoms are really severe in these cases, you definitely want to go to the doctor.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, at least get some sort of, whether it's an ointment or, you know, something like that of that manner, you know, bad enough burn, it'll do some damage to you. So, well, you know, heat, the water, it's all there. And I appreciate this here in Coffeyville specifically, but I'm not sure how many other areas. But the Recreation Commission just recently passed this about flag football all the way up to middle school. So it helps kind of the prevention of concussions. But at the same time, I was a very active, rambunctious, running, run all over the place. I would jump off of swings. I would jump off of playgrounds. And the concussion is also a big thing that parents need to keep an eye out for. Obviously, you're not going to be able to stop your kid after he's jumped off of the playground there. But you might be able to help him out and at least identify if, you know, if a concussion was actually there.
Yes. Over 200,000 children ages 14 and younger go to the emergency room for playground-related injuries. And so you want to make sure that the surfaces are well-maintained, the equipment looks like, you know, they put some care into it recently. And again, you're supervising your children.
Don't forget about the kids.
Yeah. Keep an eye on those kids. It's nice whenever you feel like you can take a break when you're out there, but you really need to keep an eye on them. Signs of concussion, they can't recall prior events. They appear dazed or confused. They can forget instructions. They seem really clumsy. Whenever something's out of the ordinary with your child, you know, that should be a sign for you that something's not right. Maybe you ask them questions and they answer them really slowly. They could possibly lose consciousness if they fall hard enough. They have mood, behavior, or personality changes. Those are the ones you observe. So the other ones would be headache, again, nauseous or vomiting, dizzy, lighter noise might bother them. So these symptoms can show up generally right after the injury. However, you may not know how serious that injury is at first. It may take hours or even days, they say. So in the first few minutes, your child or teen might be a little confused, but later they might not be able to remember anything. So you definitely want to take them to get them checked out if you feel like they've sustained a hard fall.
Absolutely. Well, and like you had mentioned, kind of keep an eye on it through the days, you know, continually check on it the following morning and the day after that. And if it hasn't improved, then it's probably time to go see the doc for sure. But again, you're not going to be able to stop them. I was never stopped. My parents tried everything. They did. They yelled at me. They did everything like that to get me to stop jumping around. And you can. You can't really prevent it, but at the same time, it's good to identify and at least be prepared for it.
Yes.
Hopefully it doesn't happen to any parents out there. So.
I was summoned this weekend to watch my child do a trick on the swing, and you just cringe, and you're like, I don't know if that's safe, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. The whole backflip off the swing or something.
That's exactly what he was doing.
I can relate. I can relate. So, again, parents out there, it's just, first and foremost, I think, like Kylie had mentioned, you know, summertime, it's a great time to relax. Maybe you have a pool in the backyard. Maybe, you know, you're having some friends and family over, but you still got to keep an eye on them. You really do. So, again, good conversation there to go along with it. And you can listen back, of course, on the main screen of our website at any time. It looks like as well, are these available online anywhere on your website?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. On the website there, you guys can find these great pieces of information here. So a couple of minutes left here. Jacob, anything that... that's right, Jacob Weber's still here.
I'm here. I've just been... I hogged the first part. So,
oh, that's all right. That's all right. Any final notes or things that you've been hearing the last week or so?
Don't turn your lawnmower off. Keep it running.
Yeah.
Keep lawn mode. I was just talking with Kylie during the break about the grass growing so well and keep mowing frequently. And that's very important. For a well-managed lawn, that the lawnmower needs to be used frequently, especially when the grass is growing like this. And of course, fertilizer only for the warm season grasses. That would be Bermuda grass. And if zoysia grass hasn't been fertilized this year, it'd probably be okay to go ahead and fertilize it once. Zoysia grass should not be fertilized very much. because that tends to produce a lot of thatch. And zoysia, that's the big problem with that particular grass, is it accumulates thatch very rapidly. And over a period of 15, 20 years, it'll actually choke itself out with a deep thatch. Bermuda grass, not so bad, but Bermuda grass is one of those cats and jammer kids. I don't know if any folks, the older folks know what I'm talking about. Cats and jammer.
Went yeah. right over my head.
The ornery, it's an ornery grass. It is a good drought-tolerant grass. Of course, we don't have to worry about drought this year so far. But it loves the heat and loves the sunshine. But its bad habit is it likes to get in everything. And you turn your back on it, and pretty soon your flower bed is just thick with Bermuda grass, and it's hard to get it out because it not only evades above ground by the stolons, it invades below ground with the rhizomes, and it goes both ways. So it's really a very aggressively invading grass, and it needs to be managed. But fescue is not quite so bad. It still spreads, but it's a bunch of grass as opposed to the Bermuda grass and the zoysia grass. But fescue tends to complete its life cycle. It goes to seed in the spring, and by midsummer it produces a seed head if you don't mow it. But we mow it, and so we don't know it, but it actually needs a kind of a rest, and fertilizing fescue now is not good.
Yeah.
It doesn't give it the rest that it needs for the rest of the summer. It'll start its fall growth activity sometime in late August, early September, depending on rainfall, availability of rainfall. That's when we really want to target the fertilization of fescues in the fall application, starting about the 1st of September, second application towards mid to late October, early November. And that should do fescue very well. Bermuda grass, fertilize now. Zoysia grass, one time, usually about the 1st of June. But if it hasn't been done, you can do it again anytime now.
I like how you said you don't have to worry about a drought. Don't speak too soon. You're going to jinx us. You're going to jinx our year for us.
We know the dry weather is coming. And
absolutely.
We know we're going to be praying for rain again at some point in time. But right now, the ducks certainly are happy.
Yes, they are. Again, that is Jacob Weber alongside Kylie Ludwig with the K-State Research and Extension Offices. Jacob won't be here next week, but we'll still check in with K-State next week. Thanks, you guys, so much.
Okay, thanks, sir.
It's 96.90 KGGF.